So let's move on to Haruhi. So this was the big comedy episode, I think, of recently and of most of the series. Early on, we got the episode where they're messing with the computer club. And now we see the effects of that, the results thereof.
Haruhi has ways.
She does messing with them. So this episode introduces the idea that, it actually starts very interesting. I want to talk about that a little bit, how we just jump in immediately to the CGI ships.
Am I on the right show?
Exactly. You know, we had the surprise of the Adventures of Mikuru Asahina in the first episode, where we suddenly had this magical girl show, and now we're getting all these CGI ships and all the characters is commanding their battleships. And they take a little while to reveal what's going on. It's not quite clear. And then we move on. We get some all this sort of space porn of all the characters, of all these ships moving around. We get to these glimpses of the characters from the back and from the side. And it looks like Haruhi. We can see her hair bands. And everyone's reacting as they normally do around Haruhi with bemusement.
Yes.
And and Haruhi reacts as normally. So we then cut into a very normal day for the SOS Brigade.
Go! The game of Go. Let's play Go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awful nice.
Check out our culture shock on Go.
Yes. Please do. And everyone has a pretty normal kind of environment. They're talking. Mikuru's making tea as usual. And whereupon, of course, things can't go normal.
Hey, what are these guys doing at the door? New members? No.
Haruhi, of course, doesn't remember them at all, but we Otaku recognize them. They're from the computer club. And so they
want their big computer back, huh?
Yeah, imagine that. So they're challenging the SOS Brigade in the way that only computer geeks can with a video game.
That they made.
Yes. So video games in Japan, at least homemade video games, are a little different than they are over here in the sense of the genres that you see a lot. This is a common style of video game that is I believe it's called like a space swarm war game, where you have thousands of ships on your side and you're pitting them in different teams against each other. And so rather than taking a lot of hits for one ship, every ship can just take one hit, and you're seeing how many of them get destroyed over time.
Oh, wow.
So it's a little different. It allows for actually, and so you mentioned Go, a more Go-like environment.
Yeah, all the different small individual battles mm-hmm. that add up to the sum total of everything.
Exactly. Another hint of why they put that little bit of Go in there. So I do love that Haruhi just doesn't remember them at all. But doesn't she offer Yuki her body or offer Yuki's body to them and if they win?
No.
And
can't do that.
Which Kyon rightly points out. Well, if you're gonna offer anyone, you should offer yourself. Which Haruhi's like, okay, no, actually, wait. So
the computer.
So of course Haruhi agrees, being Haruhi. And she suggests, there we go. She suggests, instead of that, if the SOS Brigade wins, they'll get 4 new laptops. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's a good deal for them if they can. But the guys created this game. That's
that's a
challenging.
Thing.
They're gonna play the creator of the game mm-hmm. and think they're gonna.
Yeah,
she definitely has a lot of. Confidence.
She sure does.
She does not lack that.
She's definitely not melancholy in this episode. Now, we notice here in this shot when they're all walking home some interesting things. One is that Kyon and Itsuki are back chatting with each other while the girls are ahead. You also notice something unusual about Yuki. What's Yuki doing here? It's kind of surprising.
She's not reading a book. She's actually looking at the game.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Hmm. Of course, we must point out that the art for the game features a character who looks rather suspiciously like the captain of the space battleship Yamato.
With the beard and the hat.
Yeah, it's just possible. So that's, again, kind of our hint that Yuki's a little intrigued suddenly. Things are a little different. And Koizumi, of course, says, well, this is not a bad idea. Well, I should point out one of the things we go past in this episode, which looks a little strange, is this circular object which has a frog on it. You know what that is?
Is that a manhole cover?
It is a manhole cover.
That's a strange manhole cover.
Yeah, one of the things they do in Japan is that every city and town and prefecture will have its own manhole covers. And so they'll design specific little designs for each one.
If you get lost, just look down.
Yeah, exactly. And so they look different in different parts of the city.
That's pretty neat. It keeps things from getting dull.
Right, totally. I'm not sure what the frog represents. I'm sure somebody has dug into that symbolically. So they all sit down to play the game.
LAN party.
Yep, exactly. And there's a fog of war in effect, and so they're all trying to figure that out.
She's staring at the mouse. What is this wonderful thing?
This little Star Trek 4 moment with Yuki.
I'm only familiar with books.
Hello, computer.
She's rocking the whole concept of mouse.
Exactly. We also do note that this is obviously after the earlier episodes because she has no glasses. And so Gage is all trying to figure out. Of course, Mikuru has no idea what she's doing. And we get this wonderful little montage sequence where they're all fighting and they just keep on going
Second day of training,
they all die again. Their day of training, they all die again. But there's this wonderful progression in here where if you watch the shot, watch all the characters. Mikuru is basically the same each time. The others are basically the same. But look at Yuki. She's tapping the keys, a little bit more, and she's typing normally. Now her fingers are going, pretty normal. Like she's got the hang of touch typing on this keyboard. Mikuru's fallen over.
It's blown her mind.
Completely. And here's another interesting point, actually, which I rather like, that Kyon says now, he looks over to Yuki and says, now, we're not going to cheat. We're going to do this fair and square. Yeah, because he knows what Yuki's capable of.
She has a backup.
She does. And what does she do? She gives this little nod. Just, yes.
The day of battle. Day of battle.
And then, again, wonderfully,
Lady Harley.
Yes, Lady Harley. We have this, we transition almost completely into CGI battle mode. Huh. And there's very little back with the regular people.
The Harley's version,
this is great. So every ship has its own pastel of characters. Haruhi, of course, has the weirdest aliens, the strangest people in her ship.
Bright red outfit.
Yeah. Koizumi has all these sort of mannequins.
The green, and they're all almost the same.
Mikuru has literally polka dot ships. And she all has cats. All little cats.
All cute.
And of course, Yuki has all Yukis.
Just
clones of Yuki everywhere. What's also interesting is we don't see what's on Kyon's ship.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
That's weird.
Wonder why that would be. So they begin their game. Stato.
1600 hours. Military time in space.
Everyone's things are not going so well.
Yeah, they're getting shot.
Yeah.
They're blowing
out of nowhere.
They're getting something was pixelated there. So
Haruhi says, and it beeped. Where did he say it here? Things are going bad. Launch the Gundam. So we have a little pixelated image of a Gundam firing there, which, of course, we'll get them in the copyright issues. And things are not going well with that short skirt in space. And now we come back to Yuki, and her fingers are literally a blur as she's typing on the keyboard. In fact,
wow.
They even do this thing where you hear the rattling of the laptop on the table as she's typing so fast. And Kyon comes over, and he
sees all these screens.
And he says, you know, very reasonably, I told you not to cheat. Whereupon, what does she say? I'm not cheating. Yeah. I'm reverting the game to its correct state.
Reverting the game.
Yeah.
Those don't look like the game windows, if I recall. There was space like that.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah.
Those look like command prompts.
They sure do.
Those are... Yeah. Text only.
Yeah. You figure out some way to pop all those up. So now, of course, we learn that the computer club cheated. Yeah, I love that.
Whoa. She's not cheating. She just types very fast.
Exactly. So the computer club has turned off Fog of War, and they can see what's going on. So Yuki is literally decompiling the game live.
Well, with good reason. They were getting destroyed and decimated, almost as if they were in plain sight, even though they were at a distance where they shouldn't have been in plain sight.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody.
And so now we get this key moment in the episode where Yuki turns and looks up at Kyon and asks for permission to fix the game. Now, this is important. This is a very important moment. Why is it an important moment?
Well, she's asking Kyon.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Isn't it?
That kind of goes in line with the theory that you mentioned to me earlier. I'm not sure if we've brought it up on
the
program
brought it up
yet.
Let's hold that off until the last episode, I think. Yeah. But it's interesting here that Yuki has full ability to act on her own, and yet we know that she's turning to Kyon and asking him to decide what to do. It's also remarkable in the fact that Yuki is taking initiative.
Yeah.
It is her job to merely to observe.
She has done pretty much nothing but observe, except for when that one time where she had to deal with her backup.
Right.
Kinda.
And season two will delve into the issues with her only observing. And
she's observed lots of books.
Oh, yes. She sure has. Because it's something you can do without anyone noticing her. But also note the expression on Yuki's face here. Anime series tend to focus a lot on characters' facial expressions. There's determination in Yuki's expression here. Mm-hmm. This is not the neutral expression we normally see. There's a little fire in her heart.
Yeah, she's I'd say she almost has passion.
Yeah, she's excited.
You rarely see that on her.
Yeah. And Kyon is surprised by this too. Suddenly she wants to win, which is really cool. And we see him reflected in her eyes. Get another little hint that she's paying attention to him.
This is native territory for her.
Yes.
Space battles. Right.
Right.
She's an alien.
Totally. So what does she do? She goes and she presses the key.
Enter.
And then we cut back. And another thing I love. This is a classic thing for us older anime fans, is we see that the computer club is in classic sort of 70s style anime characters. They have blue skin, the big uniforms, suits, and they're even carrying
the goblet.
The goblet of wine, which is great. Those of you who've seen Captain Harlock and Yamato, these are very familiar sights to you. we have the
stance.
Yep, exactly.
Keep.
But not turning out so well for them, because suddenly...
they're visible.
Yeah. Fog of War is off for everyone. Everyone can see everyone at all times. Now, again, this is an important theme for the show. The point here is visibility. You know, they're kind of hiding something that should just be visible and made clear to everyone else, which, of course, is what's happening to Haruhi. And so it is only fair that this would happen.
Access denied.
Access denied. Fully locked. No change. So now Haruhi can finally move forward and blow everyone to bits.
All the explosions.
And what's also fun is, and it's something that you can, there's Yuki going on the capital ship. And again, there's that hint where Yuki decides to concentrate on her fire on the capital ship. Very aggressive move. But what's cool here, and particularly funny, is when they're regularly playing the game, you hear this horribly cheesy MIDI music that's playing the entire time. Every time you cut back to the CGI, you hear this beautiful orchestral version of that same horrible the MIDI real. Music. Like they're paying attention. It switches back and forth.
The reality, the fantasy inspired by the reality.
Exactly. Hey, Liquid, glad you could join us.
It can't be. Yep.
Oh, hey, all the cliches. That's not possible. Oh, and Yuki's, I'm sorry, Haruhi's expression when she has won is just priceless. She is so happy with herself. And so she gets her laptops. And everything's back to normal. And again, here's another interesting moment where the computer club president comes back and asks if Yuki can come to their club room every so often.
She was incredible. They realized what happened.
Exactly. And then what happens? Yuki looks up at Kyon. For the okay. And what does he say? What is his response to her? Well, I should also point out before I go any further, she's not such a game member. But again, look at Yuki's expression here. It's absolute surprise.
Yeah.
And here's kind of the sad thing about it. Her expression is, somebody wants me.
Yeah, that's exactly the...
Yeah.
Now I don't know if it's partly from longing or, I've violated my directive of observation. I've come out from the radar.
Yeah, but she's not looking at her book.
She's going, hey.
Yeah. Wow.
Almost hopeful that...
something could happen. And so Kyon responds by saying, that's an adorable expression on her face. By saying, do whatever you want to.
And she has volition now.
Yeah.
She wants to.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't just say, okay, you know, I'm here to do my job.
Right.
She
says, maybe I will.
Maybe I will.
Which is rather awesome.
Aliens with desire.
What might that do in the future? Oh no.
You know, I can't remember the exact point, but one of the quotes that I really liked from this was, are you forgetting I am the divine and sacred figurehead of the SOS Brigade? I don't remember where she said that, but it was
somewhere in one of the battles. Yeah. that was a pretty awesome awesome little moment.
But it almost seems like she isn't always necessarily the one who's giving the orders.
No,
there.
She's not. Kyon
seemed to be pulling some strings there.
But that's exactly the point. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's exactly what's going on in this episode. You know, Haruhi is off blundering in her own little world.
She's got her fantasy going on. In fact, I'm the queen of this.
Yes. Remember when she moves forward despite being kind of the king piece? Everyone says, no, stay back. Stay back. No, she's definitely not the central element of this particular episode. It should also be pointed out that this episode is written by Shoji Goto, who was also the writer of a little series called Full Metal Panic.
Ah.
So a little bit of sort of inside baseball there. Full Metal Panic was... So anime studios typically get their start by making... by doing work for other anime studios and other productions. So you fill in on this episode and on this scene. And once you get enough cred, you can eventually... get to the point where you're doing your own shows.
Oh, wow. So you help out others, and eventually you get your own, and then have other people help you.
Totally. And so one of the first shows that Kyoto Animation, the studio that made Haruhi, one of the first things they did was an adaptation of Full Metal Panic, which were these novels by Shoji Goto. And they were very popular. More remarkably, the first Full Metal Panic episodes or series was done by a studio called Gonzo.
Gonzo.
Now, just like the Muppet. Now, Gonzo is well known for starting strong and finishing kind of lackluster. They do really spectacular shows that kind of fall apart near the end. At least people say that.
Now, is that story-wise, or is that animation-wise?
More story-wise, and just in terms of adapting things. They have a tough time adapting things.
The adaptation process.
Full Metal Panic is a good example. I haven't finished it, but a friend of mine did, and he said it starts really strong, but then it gets really fillery. It gets really, really slow. And it's not even filler in the sort of traditional sense. It's filler in the sense of just, we're taking so long to get anywhere. Yes, this was technically in the original story, but it's just really, really slow. So that was by Gonzo. Kyoto Animation stepped in and did the next two series, which were very well received. So Full Metal Panic was sort of Kyoto Animation stepping in and rescuing a franchise, if you will. And Shoji Goto has ever since stayed around Kyoto Animation and helped them out and written an episode here and there for things. And this is the episode he wrote for Haruhi Suzumiya. This is a moment that I believe was in one of the novels, but he kind of expanded out for this episode. And a lot of the things you see in here is Goto's work. So neat little thing there.
Exciting. Fun. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Check out more of that.
It was a fun little episode. And a little bit more for Yuki, which is never a bad thing. All right. So let's move from fun over into complexity. Because we got to talk about Boogie Pop Tandem.
Definitely complex. Every episode of Boogie Pop, I'm just constantly amazed how much there is. I can barely write fast enough to look up, and I could watch it like 4 or 5 times.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So in chat room, .hackme, great name, by the way. When is Haruhi Suzumiya? So we watch an episode before we broadcast. So the idea is you have all up until next week to watch the next episode of Haruhi Suzumiya. And then we will watch it and talk about it then. And we have, I think, 3 episodes left, which I'm going to check here real quick. That's a very good question, actually. We are on, where are we? Mm-hmm. So we just did The Day of Sagittarius. So there are 2 more episodes. Huh. Live Alive and The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya Part 5.
Merlin Curry.
Yes. So we're getting close on Haruhi
different
there.
Different than the Border Collie.
Very, very much different.
The Border Collie of...
Border Collie of Haruhi Suzumiya. There's got to be fan art of that somewhere.
The pet, you know. Yeah.
So this episode of Boogie Pop focuses on Nagi Kirima, who we've seen up to
this
point.
Oh, if we can grab those quotes. Those quotes were fantastic.
Yes. So that's a good point.
They really set the stage for each of these episodes and their impact. It seems like some anime I see quotes in the beginning, and it seems like they have absolutely nothing to do with the show, and I wonder why did they even put them in? But these have to do with the show and
absolutely.
What comes up. And in interesting ways, because it, the way it develops, you can almost, it's a puzzle, and you say, hey, you know, oh, okay, I see why that quote is used now. Oh, I'm starting to gather together the ideas.
Yeah, exactly.
She's so unusual.
Yes. And, which is the name of the episode, as well as an apt description of its subject, Nagi Kirima. And so our first quote there.
The brain is a microcosm creating its own stories. People then live out these stories. And of course, the quote is by
Seiichi Kirima.
Nagi's dad.
Exactly. So that's, and all the quotes are from CG, as far as I know.
He's the author of the book.
Yeah, exactly. So we're focusing here on Nagi. Unusually in this episode, we get these time, I forget what you'd call them, these little notes at the bottom of what time it is throughout the episode. And I think one of the reasons they're doing that is to point out that this episode is very much about Nagi and this new character we see in a very short period.
Now, let's see. It's kind of timed down. 4:27
p.m. October 28th.
October 28th.
No
butterflies.
Date. And we immediately see a glowing butterfly, so we know Monaka's around somewhere.
Memories.
Yep. Which is, a key element of the entire episode.
Most likely a painful memory.
Exactly.
The business card.
Yep. So this writer has these business cards that he's passing around. This is
Ichiko.
Ichiro Kishida.
Kishida.
Yep. And there we go. He passes by Monaka.
Freelance writer.
Which there's a lot of that, of course. Folks going around gathering stories. And Monaka releases a butterfly, which gives him a memory.
Hit him with a butterfly.
Yeah.
Here you go.
This is the episode where we get to see a lot more of the fundamental backstory of the show in terms of what caused all of this. Because we see this figure crouched on the ground, and then we see Boogie Pop appear and crouch down over him and whisper these mysterious words in his face. Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention before we go any further. What's interesting about this episode is it starts with some American jazz. Some jazz from the 20s, I believe, which for a Japanese audience would be a little off-putting. It would be positioning the episode in a kind of a different world and reminding you that we're a little off-kilter in this episode. So we also know that this writer Kishida is looking up a certain writer.
Yes. Nagi's dad.
Yes. Who had died. So we know that her father's passed away at some point. So our first sort of
His encounter with her.
Yeah.
Butterfly Girl. I forgot her. What was her?
Manaka.
Manaka. Yes. He time does not exist. Only illusion of memories exists.
That's an interesting sort of philosophical question that, you know,
the illusion of memories, not memories, but the illusion of memories.
Exactly. So, and the idea here is that we live in the present. We have memories of the past, but those memories can change. They're not permanent. So we have this illusion of memories because
our memories change, then our past changes.
And exactly.
It's all not really real. Sort of the stage of the mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Which makes you think a little bit.
Yeah.
So, of course, he goes and he sees Nagi. Nagi's kind of not interested in him, but he tags along. She's carrying this compass, and I think we've seen this before.
Yeah, the magnetic fields go crazy in certain places, especially the park.
Right. So here's where we start to really see that explored in some detail. She's exploring these environments where we see more of this rust that's everywhere. It's really filling everything out.
I remember in an earlier episode that the construction guys were amazed how something suddenly rusted and cracked and deteriorated far before it was supposed to.
Yeah.
So it seems like that's kind of growing around. I wonder if that's related to the weird magnetic fields.
Well, and she also mentions that there's also plants growing faster. And we recall from a previous episode, a house overgrown with plants.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's a factor there. And so the characters have this little run-in in the dark here. And it's a little hard to see, but they have this run-in with what appears to be Boogie Pop. And let's see here. Ah, yes.
Let's see. Boogie Pop and this guy.
Yeah, so we cut back to this moment where we can clearly see that column of light event beginning to occur. So we're really, you know, getting back to that moment. We see this character. We haven't seen him before. And we get a realization of what's going on. We see somebody jumping into the light. And it looks a little bit like the Manticore or Sao Tome or whoever the heck that character is.
And the light...
As that light expands, the light goes out. We've also seen Nagi being throttled by this bright cord.
Like she's being strangled there by somebody.
By somebody, indeed. And so in a rare moment for this episode, or for this series, we actually cut back to a character explaining what the heck's going on. Where she explains, right, this what appears to be Boogie Pop explains that there was this column of light event was caused by this character called Echoes. And that Echoes was on some kind of mission, and that Echoes basically died and created this column of light. But unfortunately, the Manticore was there as well.
Yes.
And the Manticore interfered and caused this emanation to go out throughout the city. And it's caused all of these phantoms.
Yeah.
One of them being the Manticore Phantom, one of them being the Boogie Pop Phantom. And here's where she actually refers to herself as the Boogie Pop Phantom for the first time.
Which I thought was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Partially because a phantom with consciousness.
Yes.
So not the original.
Mm-hmm.
She took the face of the original. Whose consciousness is it then if she isn't?
Right.
Or Boogie Pop isn't a phantom, obviously, but...
Mm.
Following up with the face, but then what motives, what directives? Is this even a consciousness that's related to the original? Or is it just the face that's related to the original?
So it gets to some concepts, and I think this probably goes back, or undoubtedly goes back to Japanese concepts of, you know, what is the soul, what is consciousness? If a bunch of memories get separated from a person and is given, for lack of a better word, life, you know, motive power by this electromagnetic field, what would happen? Would those memories thus give that creation a purpose? If it remembers certain things it did, if it remembers certain activities, if it remembers certain emotions and passions, would it not then act on those memories? In other words,
that makes sense. There's force there, and then the memory directing it. But depending upon what memories were activated, right, it could be directed in all sorts of different directions.
And this gets back to that earlier quote. If we are a collection of memories, then a thing that is a collection of memories is like a human.
It is equivalent. Floating in the memories.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Depending on, you know, your philosophical take on that, but that is kind of where they're going with that concept. And so the Boogie Pop Phantom kind of disappears. And so, again,
out of respect, I will call myself Boogie Pop Phantom.
Right. Yeah. Respect for my original. So that tells us a few things. It tells us that there is a Boogie Pop still going around. And while we were watching the episode, we noted that Nagi tries to hit Boogie Pop with this metal pipe, which drops through her.
Existence does not rely on matter. Everything is phantom.
That's
a very existential.
Yes.
Everything is phantom.
Well,
if time doesn't exist and matter doesn't exist, I would suppose that everything would be phantom.
Mm-hmm.
That's very surreal. It's almost
Like
a holodeck.
Yes. Well, it gets back to that question. You know, how much of you is your physical body? How much of that is necessary for you? You know, if I chop off my arm, is
what
that
makes
me?
Yeah.
And if you could download all of your memories into a computer, would that be you? And now, granted, this is operating on a level which is essentially assuming it's actually a be great to compare this to Lane, because it is basically throwing out this idea that the body is basically just a vessel for the mind.
Big container.
Lane's theorem is that the body and the mind are inextricably linked, that you cannot have the mind without the body, and that the reason that we have our bodies is to experience, you know, life. And to use that as an organ for the mind, if you will. We've obviously taken kind of the other approach.
Wow.
That we're just kind of this collection of memories and ideas and concepts. Now, it should also be pointed out, that is what Seiichi Kirima
is his perspective
on it.
It doesn't necessarily mean that all the characters agree with that. He's just the guy who wrote the book Kishida.
Mm-hmm.
Kishida is investigating.
Right. And of course, being Nagi's dad, she's going to have some thoughts on that.
And that other girl on the roof wants to know about.
Right. And one of the neat things about this episode is that we keep seeing some moments from other episodes.
Yeah.
So we see Nagi giving the little charm back to the girl who could disassemble things
from the previous episode, where the boy with his younger sister, and he carved the charm for her.
We also see her with her friend earlier when she said, "You should probably hang out around that Toka girl. You know, what if you hung out with her?" And in that episode, we saw this guy with glasses sort of standing nearby. Now we know who that is. It's this reporter character. And so they're wandering around exploring things and kind of talking through stuff. And we see this compass. Of course, this is a wonderful metaphor. You know, what is a compass? It's a thing that...
Direction.
Yeah, give you direction.
It is.
and this gets back to the thing we were talking about earlier. Boogie Pop Phantom can be seen as simply a series of philosophies. Hmm. Every episode investigates some view on life. These are all characters, teenagers, who are trying to figure out how to approach life. A compass is a thing that gives you direction. You know, so on
purpose.
Go this way. But what's happened in this city?
It's been turned upside down.
The compasses don't work. Compasses
go crazy.
Yeah.
They can't get a sense of direction. So where do they go? They need direction.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, again, another one of these symbols for what's going on in the show, that these characters are directionless and that they really haven't been able to figure out a proper direction to go, and they're kind of wandering off in these strange directions philosophically. Although, of course, plenty of humans have lots of strange philosophies as well. And again, we're in this park and we look down and we see a little tree with a CD in front of it, and we realize it's Panuru. Oh,
yeah, that's that's where she laid the Nietzsche CD.
Yeah.
The God is Dead CD.
Right, yes.
Another philosophy that's...
Absolutely. There we go. We see them walking away from that. And so, again, we get a little more explanation of what's going on here. And we get the backstory about Nagi's time in the hospital.
Yeah. So at this point, did they go to the hospital there?
Yes. So they're actually on the grounds of the hospital. And we find out that Nagi has this abnormal growth, that she was already quite old. And if you were kind of thinking about this during those episodes, you would have noticed that this was 5 years earlier, but Nagi looks about the same size she is now.
Yeah, she really hasn't changed that much.
And Nagi, in and of herself, looks bigger than the high schoolers she's hanging out with. So that is, again, your hint that Nagi has this growth issue. We also know that there is some weird stuff going on in the hospital being given to various people at the time. So was Nagi injected with these things? Quite possibly.
I wonder about that. She said something just before this about the repetition of words.
Yes. Yes.
Manticore was tracked to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And the repetition of words forming of people in the future. It seemed very kind of cryptic.
Yeah. So what she's referring to is the fact that Echoes, which is this humanoid creature that had died in the Column of Light event, he'd been tracking the Manticore, Manticore had been tracking to him. Actually, no, he'd been tracking Manticore to this city. And unfortunately, Manticore kind of turned on Echoes. And the Echoes, it is believed, at least by Nagi, is an image of what humans will be in the future.
Wow.
The idea is that humans will eventually evolve these psychic abilities, these physical abilities that we've been seeing in the show, and that eventually all people will have these things. And Echoes has basically been brought back to our current time from some point in the future.
To capture or incapacitate the Manticore?
Possibly.
Well, it seems that I think Boogie Pop explained something about the Manticore during the Column of Light experience. Yeah. The only way that the Manticore escaped was dispersing his consciousness.
Yes. So this Column of Light event occurred. The Manticore knew he was going to be defeated. And so he threw himself into the column, knowing that that would then disperse his consciousness throughout the city.
And we're thinking that consciousness is held in all these different memories. So he spread out all these memories all over the city.
As has essentially Echoes, or what's left of Echoes. So again, I shouldn't even say spoiler alert, because it's out kind of, you know, we've been doing this time. All these powers that are manifesting are echoes of Echoes the person. All of his powers are now manifesting in all these people because the Manticore messed up that event. And now all of these kids are manifesting all these powers way too early for humanity.
I wonder if those things are all held in that magnetic field. Because with the magnetic field being topsy-turvy, that happened after that dispersal.
And it's great you mentioned that, because he actually mentions, the reporter mentions the fact that when he came to the city, he noticed this aurora. Which we've been seeing the whole time, this weird moiré pattern kind of in the sky. And a lot of people watching the show think it's just some weird visual thing in the show. No, that's
part of the physics of what's happened. And
totally. Yeah, that event caused this strange electromagnetic field in the city. So that is affecting things. It's changing things. It appears to be causing this rust and this abnormal growth of things. It's also kind of interesting that it causes abnormal growth in plants, and Nagi Kirima has this abnormal growth. Who knows?
That might be related. I think there's a thread.
Quite possibly. And then we get this neat scene where they look at this hologram video game, and it looks very much like, what was that hologram video game? Was it Space Ace? That had a little hologram little thing? I forget. So they see that, and the idea is this electromagnetic field could be creating essentially holograms in the world.
And that's what Nagi's dad wrote about, was brain holography.
Yes.
And sort of the person.
And there's this common idea that, are we living in a fantastically complicated computer simulation?
Yeah.
You know, a sufficiently advanced computer simulation could simulate this entire universe. And so this is a variation.
Am I
on
not
that.
Really real? Am I just the avatar of my realness, which is somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Right. Who knows? And so this is kind of that idea that if the brain can generate these images, if the brain can create these kind of worlds within itself, what could be possible within the physical world? Can those images in the brain be projected into the real world?
It seems Manoko.
Manaka
can.
Yes,
indeed. She seems to have, from the way she seems to have changed to the point where she can, which it seems like one of the evolutionary steps in this strangeness.
That's exactly right. Manaka is doing precisely that. And we get another quote here.
The waking dream called the world is constantly changing. What's so sad about that?
Lovely little haiku almost there.
Yeah.
A little poetry. The waking dream, this idea that it is this thing occurring in someone's head.
That falls right into the simulation idea. Is this reality really the dream, and the dream really the reality?
This also gets to some of the themes we've seen in the show. Many of the characters in this show feel static.
Yeah.
You know, they feel like things are the way they are, things can't change, and they're kind of screwed. But what Cameron is saying here is it's constantly changing.
Yeah.
You know, what's so bad about that? It allows for people to become different, to break out of their molds. And we're only halfway through the episode. there's more talking here. There's stuff about the underground city, and we get a little action sequence here. So Nagi's setting up something on her cell phone, which looks so ancient by modern standards. And so they go underground. And I think before that, we get the scene at the hospital. Yes.
Oh, the hospital.
So scene, you spotted this. And good for you. I didn't even notice it at all. Nagi picks up this little notebook, which has little dates on it, which might be a hint to the fact that we're seeing all these little dates and times throughout the episode. And someone comes and picks it up, and it's not immediately obvious, but it's Manaka's mother that we've seen here and there. And she picks up and she asks, "Do I know you? Have we met?"
Indicating she might have memory lapses, and she just doesn't she's aware that she has memory lapses, but not what those memories were. maybe her daughter has all her memories.
Well, yeah.
Hi, Mom, I've got your butterflies.
Well, here's the interesting thing. I mean, it's an interesting point because we have a couple of things there. One, both Manaka and her mother now live completely in the present.
Yeah.
You know, her mother only knows the last few minutes. Manaka clearly isn't, paying attention to anything else going on. Manaka's mother doesn't even know Manaka exists, as far as we can tell. I mean, how would she?
Yeah.
And which is one of the reasons why Manaka is kind of wandering around wherever she is. And this ties in wonderfully to this theme of this episode, which is we live in the present, which is these kind of memories as baggage. I think it's a very interesting point. You brought it up that Manaka has all these memories, her mother has none.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a great idea. Maybe she did take all of her mother's memories, which is why her mother has all these issues. Of course, we also know that Manaka also has this strange growth thing where she now looks about 14, 15, despite being 5 years
older
old.
Older than she really is.
Yeah.
So she's acting age appropriate, just not
exactly
physical appearance appropriate.
Yes. But even more so to what you mentioned before, she's acting like Echoes. One of the things Echoes did was an echo. So she keeps repeating things she hears.
Words over and over.
Yeah.
And she repeats things that other people say. It's funny, at the beginning of the episode, when Kishida encounters her.
Yeah.
He said she hits him with a butterfly, and he has that weird memory. And then he goes, "What the hell was that?" And she repeats the same thing he said, parroting it right back to him, repeating exactly what he said.
Yeah.
And
the quote,
the perfection has, pure perfection has no past. That is how you live purely.
So this is not just about living; it's about living purely.
With it by eliminating your past?
Indeed.
I guess if you have no past, you have no record of wrong.
Yes.
And that's pure.
Yes, exactly. It's a very Buddhist concept, living in the moment, living in the now.
The present.
Mm-hmm. And kind of dealing with all of your, the issues of your past. And so now we get our wonderful action sequence down in the sewers and the unbuilt new city. And we get a little bit of social commentary here because they were going to build this new sort of underground city, but then the economy tanked. all that had to change. Boogie Pop was made about 5 or 6 years into the great Japanese economic meltdown of the 90s.
All the tunnels that were built that didn't get used.
Yeah. So
now they can explore.
And it should be pointed out, Japan in particular and Tokyo, and Japan in general, Tokyo in particular, has a lot of underground and undercity stuff for dealing with things like water, because they get so much rain and so many typhoons, they need lots of infrastructure to deal with all that water flowing through.
So when we see these giant pumps and underground cities in other anime, that is
real,
built around a real scenario. Yeah,
I've seen documentaries where they go through these miles long tunnels underground where they're just like, yeah, this is because we'll get, you know, thousands of tons of water just pouring through here, and otherwise it's going to flood the city. We have to, it all goes somewhere. We have much less sewers and all the other infrastructure. There are, you know, and of course the Gundam reserves. Gotta have those too. So we get this fight sequence between Nagi and Manticore and Boogie Pop Phantom.
And the reporter's there to take notes.
Yeah, basically. He's kind of observing. But we see our first image of something that we'll come back to a little bit later. These cocoons.
I'll see if I can find that was creepy. Cocoons.
Very creepy.
So here she is putting all these things that look like time bombs.
Yeah.
But we find out they're not bombs in the sense of explosive, but in the sense of electromagnetic field disruptors.
Yes. So she is blocking this field, which is causing the Manticore Phantom to kind of go crazy. Because that's his lifeblood. That's how he exists.
So she's planted bunches of these, and then she encounters, what is it, a cocoon?
It's very creepy. Strange.
It's like the largest spider. I'd flip out. Something that big is not going to live in the tunnel that I want to be in.
Yeah. But Kishida sees them. He sees inside them are people.
Faces.
Yeah.
Like they've been eaten.
Wrapped up in there. So we don't know quite what that is just yet, but we do know. Oops, that's going a little too far. But Boogie Pop Phantom then shows up to disperse the Manticore Phantom and saying, "Okay, he's now dispersed enough that he's weak enough. He's not going to come back." But also significantly, she explains that she is the main reason why all these children have been disappearing.
Yeah, that was weird. I'm just curious about that. Yeah. What about these children?
And Boogie Pop Phantom.
I've taken them.
Yes. And
to save them.
To save them. Right.
You took them to save them? That's a strange Pied Piper there.
Right. Very much. Indeed. There's another interesting moment actually here, which I see if we can get when, I don't know if we can actually see it with all the, there's those weird things. When Nagi goes to press the bombs and to activate the bombs, there's this strange expression on her face. There's this expression almost of pity. Like she's sad for what she's about to do. And I can't find it here.
Nagi's sad.
Her expression changes. It's not just that firm determination. Just for a moment, She looks sad. And here's the thing. This isn't the Manticore Phantom just. It is also the symbol of Rama Sao Tome, who went to her high school, who she probably knew.
Yeah.
What feelings might she have had for Sao Tome that he's standing there right in front of her, and she's about to make him disappear?
Even if he is a Manticore.
Yeah.
He still looks like the guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She has known.
Right. So there's something there, I think. Anyway, so she fires these off, and
but they don't.
Well, they don't work. And here's a wonderful little writing thing: is that they don't work. Talking about Phantom comes in and goes, "Excuse me, I need that magnetic field to live too."
Yeah. So both Manticore and Boogie Pop live in this magnetic field.
Yes,
that's just chaos. That throws all your compasses off. So they live in this field. That
yeah. But yeah, it's a big.
But that Manticore's hand went
yes,
like wacky, crazy.
Yeah, we've seen that anime where it all goes all tentacle. Very scary. Which I'm sure is a bit of a reference there. And they're having some fun with the audience there with that imagery. And then that,
ooh,
yeah, that wonderful cord of light,
creepy web,
yeah, goes around the Manticore and takes him out. And then we get this interesting scene with Nagi and Kishido when they go back outside, and suddenly, and they're kind of talking to each other about what happened, and suddenly all the lights come on, and suddenly
bizarre.
They're in Paisley Park.
But Paisley Park never got built.
No,
never
didn't.
Got completed. The funds fell right through. They pulled out the backing. What's his name went wacko over.
Yeah,
like all depressed.
Yeah, we we've seen images of some of it, so we know it got partly constructed,
but
certainly not completed.
Lights in the middle
and
of the night.
And there's Poom Poom and Minaka walking past, and then it fades away again. All shuts down.
Cool.
Well, we know that Nagi's been screwing around a bit with the electromagnetic field, and maybe that caused something. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it is certainly an interesting question. We'll see more about them in the next few episodes. Liquid asks, what known anime during the time we know got affected by the bad 90s economy? All of them. If you look at anime budgets in the early 90s versus the late 90s, look at Tenchi Muyo.
The whole culture.
Yeah. If you look at the first Tenchi OVA, compared to, say, Tenchi in Tokyo, it should be better that the first Tenchi TV series versus Tenchi in Tokyo, budgets got much lower.
I can't confirm, but I feel like Speedgrapher kind of grew out of that environment.
Oh, interesting.
There's a big concern about building up stockpiles of cash and the big differences between the people who are able to do this, living in these giant high rises with opulent living, and everybody else who's just dying to get cash and get in on it. But I don't know. I mean, it's supposition on my part, but
wouldn't surprise me at all.
Wouldn't surprise me if that kind of story came out.
There's a surprising amount of anime that is about cultural things going on at the time of various sizes. Double Zeta Gundam actually has a reference to certain adult comics of the time. Shimoneta, the current anime series, also called A Boring World Where Dirty Jokes Don't Exist, is a reference to some legislation.
No.
Yes, exactly.
We're just going to be doing one of the Boogie Pop episodes. Time constraints impeded our ability to absorb more than one episode.
Yeah, let's just be honest. Traffic completely destroyed us.
Yeah.
There was some terrible accidents in our area today, and so we couldn't get here in time. And so that happened. So yeah, we're just doing the one episode today. Normally we try to do two, but just
but we barely had time for this one. We can go to extended rounds.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so that's fine. that happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, we barely got this one in. Also note, as we see him walking away, we see three teenage girls in the shot.
Ooh,
now, I'm not sure from this.
Aren't those the three teenage girls from the earlier episodes?
Yes, I think they're from episode one.
Yeah.
I think, yes. That's them.
Trying to get their friend to come out.
Yep, exactly.
It's funny. Mm-hmm. All the characters keep kind of encountering each other, even though they don't know that.
Yep.
There's some correlation between their lives.
There's even a little reference here as he's riding away on the subway. We see that shimmer of light. Yes, that the Manticore followed came in on. And the lights shine.
How can you say you are a phantom?
So that's an interesting way of phrasing it.
Yeah.
He's not asking, how can you say you are not a phantom?
How can you say you are a phantom? If a phantom doesn't have a corporeal body... How is
and that's exactly his
that said
exactly his point. You know, Boogie Bop Phantom calls herself a phantom, but if she exists, is she really a phantom?
She's memories. She's collective, mm-hmm. but you can swipe pipes through her. So in that sense, she's a phantom. But to be able to vocalize something, she must be using those electromagnetic waves somehow.
Must be,
which is really far advanced for some developing human from the future to grab electromagnetic waves and be able to speak to people.
Totally. Yeah, it's an interesting question. Yeah, so that is our episode of Boogie Pop Phantom for tonight. As you mentioned, we had some delays, so we will be coming back next time with this episode.
Episode